going on in the rest of the world? You're fed on
this.
Yeah,
you are. Yes, sir.
You'll come to order. Good morning.
Good morning. Mr. Chairman, we have two sets of meeting notes. Remember the last time you tabled the approval of the meeting notes from the previous month because you asked us to better reflect the statement by the committee for that. I think we have done that, and it's included on page 3 of 7 on your booklet.
Speaking of the minutes from the March meeting.
Correct, sir.
And the italicized.
Correct, sir.
Okay. Is there any question, members of the committee, about the revised minutes for the March meeting? Motion to accept the minutes of the March meeting.
So moved. Second.
And all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That motion carries. How about the April meeting? You like those?
Move approval. Second.
Discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Somebody besides Mr. Hoffman want to
make? Aye.
Aye. Dissenting, Jim?
Yes.
Okay. That motion carries. Minutes are approved as presented. That brings us to action items. Mr. Sulfax.
The first presentation today, Mr. Chairman, is about our bus technology and the multi-year procurement. You may recall that the committee asked us to go ahead and evaluate the different bus technologies available to us and come back to you and give you our findings. Well, I have Bob Golden and our chief engineer, Dan Allen, here today to take you through. Bob?
Good morning. Our purpose here today is to advise you of our bus technology selection for our FY08-11 bus procurements. Next slide, please. On this slide, you can see our current future bus procurements, which include 50 hybrid electric buses for Maryland to complete that commitment, up to 185 expansion buses, and 241 replacement buses that would kick in 09 to 11 and 9 to 12. What we would like to do is to level out our bus procurement process and procure 100 buses annually to maintain the average fleet age and also allow other transit properties to purchase options from our contract. And this graph indicates where we would be with the current bus procurement, and it would be slightly similar to that as we go with 100 buses a year. Next slide, please. The bus technology assessment was conducted using the technologies we currently have here at WMATA. So that's why you see the diesel, the CNG, and the hybrid bus up there, which happens to be a hybrid diesel. You see capital cost per vehicle, the diesel has an advantage with the hybrid, going up to the hybrid is the most expensive. In facilities, you have the diesel, at least the most cost effective, the CNG, the most costly, and the hybrid falling just ahead of the CNG bus. The operating cost per vehicle, the hybrid bus, and this is based on our own experience as well as what we've seen from other transit authorities, gives us the best return on our dollar. Costs, operating costs for facilities, the diesels are a little bit better than the hybrid, and the CNG falls behind the hybrid. On fuel economy, we get the best bang for our buck with the hybrid electric buses. We're seeing anywhere between 20 to 30% in improved fuel economy. Reliability, the hybrid has all three fleets beat hands down. Just as a point of interest, I'd like to state that since our hybrids have been running, they have accumulated 339,441 miles of an astounding only 15 service interruptions for an average MDBF of 22,629 miles. That's the highest of any fleet we've ever operated. On emissions, the hybrid and CNG are very close, the diesel being the worst. And with the calibration potential on our new hybrid electric buses, they actually feel with one of the software programs they're proposing to us, we can actually get just below the CNG bus. Next slide, please. Our recommendations, and this is extremely important, we're not closing the door on the CNG bus technology. It's performed very well for us and has been very reliable. Our first bullet, preserve the CNG fleet and consider CNG in future bus maintenance facilities. Facility support is going to be an extremely important issue. Our second bullet, obtain approval to initiate and award a multi-year bus procurement. Our preference is for 100 hybrid buses a year for a five-year contract with a base contract and option for 100 buses a year annually. The options are assignable to other agencies should we not use them, so that we'd be able to help the other transit properties within our region. Conduct a bus industry review and review new bus design concept with the board. With the bus manufacturers coming out with new bus designs, we feel this is a really important issue, and we can address the concerns of the board as voiced over the last couple of years regarding our bread box buses and bring something that's more amenable to their liking. Next point, review the new bus design, which is the bus that's on the left. You'll see a comparison. The picture on the right, our first 39 hybrid electric buses show the current design. The one on the left are the new design, new Flyer buses, which are currently being delivered. So we want to review the new look design, hybrid bus design, with the Riders Advisory County Committee, and discuss any passenger amenities that they may want to have some input on those buses. And the fourth and last bullet, the first 50 hybrid buses in this multiple-year procurement would be designated to fulfill the Maryland commitment for the last 50 of the 100 hybrid electric buses here to procure for their services. Next, we have obtain approval to exercise an existing contract option to procure 25 additional CNG buses to meet service needs utilizing Metro Matters expansion bus funding. There are going to be service increases in fiscal year 07, and in lieu of pulling old diesel buses out of the storage pile, we would like to exercise an existing option for the CNG buses, and we figure we can squeeze them in at our Bladensburg facility, and that would max that facility out and get the buses here in an expeditious manner for our riders. The third and final major bullet is obtain approval to submit to the FTA for participation in the new fuel cell program to provide, and it's actually up to 8 demonstration buses under 2 technologies using fuel cell technology, one with Georgetown taking the lead and the other with us taking the lead, and the 2 fuel technologies that will be associated with the fuel cell buses, with methanol and hydrogen. Next slide, please. The next steps would be to submit an FTA for participation in the new fuel cell bus demonstration program, and that's what I just described to you. Second bullet, finalize an action plan or create a program for bus facilities. And this is extremely imperative to complement a bus procurement program. Intensive efforts for relocation of Royal Street and Southeast bus facilities. As these newer technology buses come in, we are facing some restrictions because of the heights of the buses, especially in 2010. Actually, I'm jumping ahead of myself. We want to complete the West Ox bus facility by 2008. By 2010, and this is a key, due to new emission standards, 5 of our existing 10 garages will no longer be able to support new buses due to height restrictions. The reason being, even with the diesel, the CNG, they're moving everything to the roof. Battery packs, CNG tanks, air conditioning, regardless. They're going to need the entire rear section of the bus for the engine and the emission equipment, and they have apprised us of the fact it will have to go up on the roof of the bus. Based on that, the standard bus procurement guideline is now increasing their minimum height requirement to 140 inches. Currently, we hold ours at 135, so this is going to be an issue. WMATA has limited capacity for fleet expansion and is nearing full capacity at existing facilities. This is particularly true with our CNG fleet. The 4-mile facility is already maxed out at 212 buses, and we figure when we squeeze the 25 additional buses into Bladensburg, we will reach saturation at the Bladensburg facility. And basically, that's it at this point in the presentation. Are there any questions?
Scott.
The third bullet, so it's 2010.
Yes, sir.
You say 5% existing garages.
Correct.
How many of those 5 would be modified by 2010? They're existing capital program, so they can't support the buses.
Not on this point in time. are scheduled for replacement.
We do have plans for two bus facilities, as you know. The one is three, West Axe, that's moving. That would be okay. Second one is the Southeast bus, which hopefully we're going to be able to relocate it the next 5-6 months a year to be a new facility there where we can do the new buses. And then we're working with the city of Alexandria for the Royal Street relocation. But I know now three from the existing, only one can be used for the higher bus lanes. That's where we are.
Okay, so the five that have the high problem, which are there? Are you saying they're Royal Street?
Royal, Arlington, Southern, Southeast, which is marginal, and Western.
Okay, so three we know are being replaced.
Northern, Bladensburg, Landover, Montgomery, they can accommodate them.
Okay. I'm glad to see that the recommendation is for alternatively fueled vehicles. The question I have, the options for that additional 25, you mentioned you got some room at Bladensburg.
Yes.
Isn't there still some room left to form out?
As I understand it from bus operations, we get over a maximum 216 buses, and that's where 212 of the big buses and then the four ag buses were maxed out at 4 mile also.
You have 216 CNG buses?
I mean, 212 CNG and four tag buses.
There's 212 CNG buses
right now. Right. Well, there will be when the delivery is complete.
Okay, well, that's my question. How many we got there?
There's 247 on the property, and I think they said there are 229 in revenue service, and that's split with about 204 at 4 mile right now.
So you got room for eight more. You haven't received the whole delivery yet?
They're here, but there's a processing. You have to get the tags, put the fare
boxes in.
Okay,
so they're in the property, but not the same
service. They're not in revenue service, correct.
And you'll have maxed that out.
Right, correct.
All right, I have some other questions, but...
Yeah, on the Metro Matters funding component of this, we now have a chart that kind of shows where that shows up.
It's in the meters. There's $12.3 million available in fiscal year 07 for bus expansion under Metro Matters. And that's what we are proposing to use for these 25 buses.
Okay, and how does that work with the cash flow distribution in terms of dealing with the cash? Got cash we haven't spent.
Here, we do. A lot of that has to do, as we went through that before with those projects that some are delayed, others just haven't started yet. This fits in consistent with our prior cash flow because buses haven't really been the problem. The problems have been on the rail facilities and the rail cars. But that's why we're also going through this broader capital programming exercise to try to align our going forward estimates with what our actual experience is now with Metro Matters, and that's something that Chuck Woodruff is leading over the course of this summer. But this doesn't impact
the amount
negative.
Is fairly nominal. It's,
right.
It's not a flag for us to worry in terms of the cash flow condition.
No, this wouldn't either increase or decrease really those cash flows. Our issues are in terms of cash flow bigger than these numbers.
But I understand what you're asking for is authority of basically for 100 buses with options.
For each year, yes, sir.
So it's potentially up to 500 buses.
It would be potentially a base of 500 buses with options for 500 buses.
And the idea, as we discussed before, is to try to get to a continual fleet replacement cycle rather than buying big slugs of buses. So hopefully we move forward on this going, exclusive of the technology discussion, going forward to 100 bus a year purchase that we build into our spending patterns going forward, so we continually replace
it. Is part of the thinking that such a procurement will attract more interest?
Absolutely. Part of the thinking is that we'll attract more interest because of the long-term nature, the consistent funding nature of it, that we can A, attract more interest, and B, dictate more to the market what we're looking for.
I can keep the assembly line running kind of continuously, and that's the one I want to bid on. And is part of the idea then that some of the actual, some of the folks who are going to get this aren't us, but the others are going to come in under our contract?
Yes.
It's assignable so that we may not actually be used, able to use 500 buses in 5 years, but some others may, and we're still building some market power that way.
Actually, our proposal is, the idea is that we would use 100 buses a year, 500 over the 5 years, and that we would have options of up to an additional 100 a year.
Over and above that.
Over and above that, that could be assignable. Now, any one of the bases could be assignable, too. We could move forward and procure it. We just didn't need 100 buses. We just dropped 400 in. So if there was a feeling at any time that it wasn't necessary to maintain a fleet replacement cycle for whatever reason, that we could assign any one of the base buses. But the neat thing about it is that there's another 100 buses, and that makes it very attractive.
And the specification is for hybrid electric. Does it specify which of the technologies, since there's are you interested in the one you've been using, or are you interested in make us an offer?
We're interested in the one we're using, but we're still going to remain fuel neutral, and we're going to be open to the other technologies that are out there. Primarily, we're looking for a hybrid electric bus. So there are other technologies, but there's series and parallel, and we still want to keep the door open to look to just allow us that latitude.
We haven't mentioned it, but we have West Virginia University coming in to actually do emissions testing on the WMATA bus fleet, with a focus particularly on the hybrid buses, to see what our revenue duty cycle emissions are.
It's really is.
Exactly.
I'm looking particularly at particulates and oxide.
Exactly right, because we know that's our scariest type of emissions, and we want to see what our duty cycle, what it yields in these vehicles, A, so we can adjust the software on the vehicles, but B, so we can get the best sense of what type of technology yields the best result on an emissions standpoint.
Yes, and I think Mr. Graham is going to raise the same issue, so I'll allow him to do it. Okay. I can't give my time to Mr. Graham.
Doesn't work that way.
I'm not passing. Let me ask you. You define the new fuel cell program, FTA. The Georgetown fuel cell program has been around for a while. How do you define as a new fuel cell? Is there something specific that's been developed lately?
This would be the third phase of the Georgetown program. They're moving to a 40-foot bus, which is, as you know, our standard bus. And they, of course, already have the fueling facility for methanol. So they've invited us to join their team to really take their concept of methanol production and fuel into a standard operating procedure with other authority. Obviously, we're the obvious authority to work with them. So it's a great opportunity for us, I think, to explore this fuel as a base fuel for future hybrid purchases.
And the other question, piggybacking the concept of allowing other transit properties here to buy into your contract. Have we had any discussions to see if there's interest? Particularly, I'm interested, since we're planning this bus summit, whether we've had any discussions with any of the local transit systems to see whether or not they would have some interest.
Actually, yes, we have. In our current CNG contract, Montgomery County is buying buses off of our contract. And actually, Sacramento, four other transit properties.
I was saying local.
Okay. Staying local so far, only Montgomery County has chosen to buy off of our contract, but they're the only ones close in that have a CNG fleet. Prior to us going to CNG buses, we have had other regional transit properties buy off of our contract for diesel buses. So, yes, there would be interest. We know that Montgomery County right now took delivery of their first 4 or 5 hybrid electric buses. We know there would be interest from their point of view. Baltimore, which apparently has just announced they're going with a major procurement of hybrid buses, they may express...
Let me define local. Local is basically our service area is what I'm trying to decide. Whether or not Fairfax, Montgomery, Arlington, I'm defining this within our service area. That's what I mean by that.
Up to this point, no, they have not, as far as I know, expressed interest in joining us on the hybrid. On previous procurements, I'm saying they have, on diesels.
Have they been asked?
I'm not aware of whether we've asked them at this point in time. But that was their intent when we put the additional option buses in there, to ask them, you know, if they were willing to participate.
Yes, I'm a little partial. I'm trying to focus this towards the bus summit, and I'm trying to think in terms of, you know, my vision is we have a kind of a virtual regional bus system. And I think going forward to kind of continue to promote that concept,
yes,
that the service area providers needs to at least be engaged in these kind of discussions to kind of know what our thinking is and how we're planning to go forward. And we may get some commonality that will make a major bus purchase even more vital.
I agree.
That's a good point. And part of it is, of course, what you're preparing, because, for instance, the ART Dash don't use 40-foot buses. They don't print them. This is 35 to 30, I believe. You know, ART, I don't know that we'll ever purchase a 40-foot bus, because we, mostly if it's 40-foot service, it's metro bus service. So we're doing a different thing. Now, the procurement uses a wide variety, and I see the note here, you put 30 and 35 foots in the procurement, well, then there might be that opportunity for us to take a look at that. When is the bus summit?
September is what we're moving towards, and we have staff proposal on that we want to discuss at an appropriate time with the board.
Well, I just wanted to say, on the fuel cell that Mr. Linton is referring to, I don't actually see it in the action. Is it really part of this, or is that an aside?
We are seeking approval for the first phase, which is simply the submission of a white paper with our concepts. There will be a second.
What? Submission of what?
A white paper, as they call it, FTA white paper.
You have to submit a paper to them?
There will be two. As Bob said, we're submitting as a partner or a team member with Georgetown. They're in the lead. The second one was with us in the lead, looking at hydrogen as the primary fuel.
You need our permission to do this?
We're asking for your authority to submit the white paper. We will come back to you for phase two in the full.
That sounds fine. Just, I hear you saying it, but I don't actually see it in the action documents. You mean in the presentation?
Oh, I understand.
I'm looking at the thing that, you know, sort of the business end of this. I just don't see anything where we actually are providing that authorization. And maybe something's coming when this goes to the board. But I'm just asking whether there's some language in there that actually says we authorize this. I may be missing it, but I couldn't find it. Anyway, you can go back to the answer on that. Mr. Graham.
Mr. Zimmerman, thank you. We have the representatives from the District of Columbia have a legal issue regarding this proposal to initiate and award a one-year base contract with 4 one-year options for hybrid electric buses. And as all of us here have done, I have taken an oath to uphold the laws of the District of Columbia. And under DC Act 15-594, Section 7063, beginning in fiscal year 2006, the mayor shall not submit a budget or WMATA to the Council of the District of Columbia that funds diesel or diesel-electric hybrid buses. Now, I recognize that this law is in effect. I recognize that there are various complexities to this because we are very nearly at capacity. I don't think we're totally at capacity for CNG buses. The memo I have says the Bladensburg garage is close to capacity, but we're very nearly there. It's very difficult, obviously, at this point to add CNG buses without fueling stations and other apparatus that supports all of that. But we're in a little bit of a difficult, we're not a little bit, we're in a difficult situation because I think the spirit of this law would require us to vote no on this action. And I do want to say that I had a conversation yesterday with council members about how we might wish to modify this. We have no specific language. We have the Budget Support Act before us at the present time in the council. But with this very clear expression from the government, the legislature and the executive, I'm not sure at this particular juncture we can support this proposal. I don't know what Mrs. Mack might have her own views on this, but I think to do otherwise would be contrary to the spirit, if not the letter, of this law.
Mr. Graham,
we will have no resolution in 2 weeks. The earliest we will have...
I'm wondering if this could maybe go forward.
No. Assuming that we have a resolution, which I'm not sure we do, because there are, as you know, Mr. Zimmerman, various sensitivities associated with CNG, but assuming that we have a resolution, that we wouldn't have it until late June. So...
May I make a comment about what the implications are? Obviously, the implications are if there are no other buses purchased for the District of Columbia other than CNG buses, we're at capacity in
near
the facility.
Near capacity.
And with the next 25 buses, we will be.
It's actually procurable.
Right. We will procure the remaining element that takes you to capacity. And the fact that the remaining district garages are not CNG convertible, and there are no funds in the budget to convert them to CNG. And the other jurisdictions move forward and somehow buy their own buses. That means the District of Columbia will get the oldest and dirtiest buses to D.C. And so in an attempt to have the cleanest fleet, district will have kind of a bipolar fleet of the cleanest and the dirtiest. And so the question is there possible a way to move forward with the City Council and or at least explore it or move forward on the action in such a way that recognizes that in order to actually move to award, you would need that resolution, but at least allow us to continue to move forward on developing the specifications and the necessary work with other jurisdictions to get a procurement put together, because it takes a while to do.
Well, that's, if I may, Mr. Chairman, that's precisely the dilemma and the challenge that we have, and we've just got to put our heads together. I'm not expressing this as a definitive block or threatening a veto or anything else. I'm just saying we have a problem that we need to work out, and I don't have a solution as yet. Maybe others do, but we have to look at it in light of all of the various sensitivities and issues that are involved.
Just as a practical matter, procedurally, again, normally this thing would be going forward to the board in a couple of weeks, and that's really where the action is in question, and the votes of the district representative. So I'm wondering, do you have any objection to this being, when we're done today, being forwarded out of committee, with the understanding that the district members have a problem with it?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think our rules would permit approval by the committee with a majority of the members of the committee.
That's what I mean. If you were willing to abstain or whatever at this point with the understanding that vote counts, you'd be under a certain obligation and we have to work that out. I'll be a problem.
I think the majority is probably here to pass this today. You know, our two votes, even if cast in the negative.
Oh, because there's no veto on it.
Right, there's no, so I mean, I would feel more comfortable. I'm just speaking for myself. I feel more comfortable with this plain law in front of me to vote no, and then commit to do everything we could to work it out.
I take it.
The actual purchase that's before us, and I was just raised with you, for next year would be CNG buses. So it would not be until year 2008. That this purchase would, in fact, affect non-CNG buses, correct? Is there any way to go forth with this so that you can get the CNG purchase, separate the two in this?
My guess is the votes wouldn't be there at the board either. I got a hunch.
But what is the
plan is to buy the CNGs and then 2027 book. So why wouldn't the vote be there to allow that portion to go forward? Because the following.
We're not going to redo.
I mean, you really want
to
have.
No, I'm not trying to redo. I'm trying to stay where we are and allow it to go forward as we had agreed to. That's not my effort to try to change the previous vote. Come on, guys. Being tragic and practical, not political.
Well, we could separate the issue. We could divide the question. Could we not?
We certainly could, and I think we know how that one turns out, too. Evelyn? assist, we can certainly do that. We'll allow that kind of thing to come up.
And I'm
at least at
the and I'm not trying to revisit the decision that was made. I am trying to keep some way of procurement going forward. And that, there's a way of doing the procurement and staying with the previous decision. I don't want to be at that point.
Mr. Kaufman was next.
Just to be sure I understand the mechanics, looking at this, is there going to be, is this the first of the ultimate two actions? This is an initiative. Do we later on have a formal action to formalize the purchase? Or is it all wrapped up? I know I'm reading the language, but I'm also thinking the process of the metro. Is this the last we see of this document? How would we separate the two to allow additional time for the untying of the meeting? Would that affect the prices we go?
I don't think it necessarily would if we brought it back to the board and the final award action. If that then gave us time to move forward on initiating the process and having the discussions, developing the procurement, and actually even issuing an RFP.
If we were to separate the two, it would not affect the bid prices. When do you envision the physical awarding coming before us for a vote?
A procurement of this sort, if we're going to involve the RAC and we're going to involve other jurisdictions, probably 6 months.
Mr. Graham,
what
do you think? Can we give enough time for the district to act?
Well, we will know the outcome of this, as I said, by late June, or earlier. I mean, it's a question of whether people wish to change it. We need the specific language to see whether it's worthy of consideration.
Chairman, is in the interest of trying to move this forward and not put a colleague from the district in a situation, I've moved this item forward to the full board between now and the board acting will find a way to separate out the two so as to accommodate their time schedule.
Well, I'm not sure I fully understand the motion. The motion is the recommendation clock?
To move forward as an item, this item is separating out the initiating the work process so as to allow Mr. Coleman the time to find the
program. We're divided into two actions. The action that would be taken in 2 weeks would be to initiate.
Correct.
The award would come at a subsequent time, by which time the district issue might be resolved.
That's exactly what I was meaning.
You're hoping that the district members would not be obliged to vote no or to initiate a portion of that, and thereby allow that to go forward and give them time to work on the question.
That's correct.
So you want to know whether you want that piece of the motion?
That's a motion, sir.
I got a motion, Mr. Kaufman. Is there a second?
Second.
Second, Mr. Swain.
I have a comment on that. I suppose Mr. Kaufman's motion is okay, but we could make that separation at the board meeting if after the district consulted the appropriate people and determined the likelihood of success within the district of this. If it turns out that it needs to be separated, it can be done in 2 weeks. Yeah, so either of those.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First, Mr. Litton, in regard to the bus summit, I just returned from the AfterBus conference, and we had some very good discussions going on, thanks to Jack Reed, our staff at Prince George's County, and partnering with might want to get with Mr. Requa. There's a lot of things learned at this conference that might be very beneficial to the District of Columbia and their argument is the way we're trying to proceed. I was astonished that a bus can go 100,000 miles with that breakdown.
About what?
100,000 miles with that breakdown. You know, and that's with the hybrid electric stuff. They're talking 30,000 miles plus. And Jack, correct me if I'm wrong on any, it's without an oil change. So there's lots of economies that can be saved by these hybrid buses. But, you know, I think what I'm trying to say is a lot has changed in the year. And I think we're up to 36 cities in North America that have purchased the hybrids now, where when we were first talking about it, it was only a handful. And the reviews that I got at the after conference were just glowing about the performance. So, you know, things change every day, and it might be helpful in the way the city looks at the purchase of the buses. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We didn't talk a lot about the other aspects that are not propulsion related, but you mentioned some of them in the presentation, and that's of interest to me, and particularly in conjunction with the bus summit. On the other hand, if you're doing the procurement before the bus summit, then, you know, okay, I heard a bus summit in September. You want to initiate an award? This is A. So,
yeah, but initiate means having those preliminary discussions, working through what the specifications would be. I think the bus summit could really be a culmination of those discussions where we kind of put the final.
Okay, my concern is that's getting close to the time you'd be awarding a contract. And it's the period between now and then which you need to be thinking about.
I said it'd be about 6 months, so that would put us in November. That would put the bus summit really kind of towards the end, but really an opportunity to actually use the bus summit as a bake-off,
really,
between potential bidders. I think actually the timing is pretty good.
Okay. Well, if that's going to work, that's all my concern. You know, in the end, I want a bus that, you know, what did you call it? Not a red box?
Not a bread box. The bread box is on the right, one bread box on the left.
And I've seen those two buses, so I understand, you know, some of the differences, although at least one person has commented to me that with those two pictures, they can't tell the difference. and frankly, there's not a whole lot that's different, because the one on the left is like a half gesture by one manufacturer. You're doing a 21st century bus, which every bus sold in Europe, as far as I can tell, is a 21st century bus. If you really wanted a picture of what one looks like, you just need to go and take one of the ones that we operate that this fellow bought. No, I mean, that's what a decent bus looks like.
Well, they're working their way around the bus. They have a new rear on it, and now they're actually redesigning the sides of that specific bus there, and I understand about it after. And some of the other Orion's getting ready to get introduced their new next generation bus next year. So they are following the lead of the European bus manufacturers. We used to lead, that was a reverse.
The sad thing is, for the most part, these are the same companies, because most of the manufacturers that we have are European companies. They're owned by European companies. They just won't sell us the bus, they sell everywhere there. I mean, all you have to do is look at the side windows to see the difference.
Well, you're going to have a rear, you will have a rear, the diesel buses that are getting ready to come in do have the rear window just like their Van Hool buses.
I'm glad we have rear windows, but I'm talking about the side windows here.
Well, we're right. Working on them. We've got the front and rear with different sides.
So we've actually talked to the bus manufacturers, and they're working with the window manufacturer to be able to install the flush-style mount windows that they have on the Van Hool on buses.
And that's one example. So my hope was that we'd be able to get, you know, complete specification of the kind of things people are looking for in a bus. People who choose to ride transit would choose to ride, because that is, you know, the biggest difference between the rail system and the bus system. Profile of the rider shows up in all, you know, all the studies. We need to start making a difference with that. The comment on slide 4 that said, this is there, review the new look design hybrid bus design with the Riders Advisory Council. I'm not sure exactly what it means, but new look perhaps should be in quote or in trademark or something. I mean, that is one particular manufacturer's new look bus. That is not a generic specification.
In answer to that, all three of them have, they're calling them restyles. Or next generation buses. Gillig has one. New Flyer has that. New Flyer actually has two. They have that one in the Enviro, which they're going to phase out. And the other one is with Orion. Their next generation bus. They're all working to introduce these new buses this current year. And what we wanted to do was work with the Riders Advisory Committee on issues that may have a direct impact on the passengers, our riders. We wanted to, they thought about some of the issues or designs that were going to be coming or being introduced with these new buses to make sure we have some buy-in from them.
Okay. Well, I think it's, if you get a thorough discussion, the Riders Advisory Council gets to see all the issues involved, you know, and feed into this as we head to address them. I think that'll be a very good thing. Further discussion? Question is on the motion to approve the staff recommendation. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Any of the chair, the ayes have it. Mrs. Magnus, Dr. Grant, is dissenting. Is that accurate? And the minutes will reflect if the motion passed. What is that? 6-7-2. 7-2, Mr. Grant. Chair votes aye also, so 7-2, Mr. Graham, Mr. Mack, somewhere on the county, somebody's on the
committee. Is that right on the committee?
Yes. It's 6-2.
Why is it 6?
Because there's 4 Maryland members.
Oh, and you can't all get to vote. This is true. Thank you for the correction. 6-2, again, the district representative dissenting. All right, next item.
Mr. Chairman, the next is the second year of our 5-year contracts we have with our consulting services providers, and Harry Lupia is here to take you through briefly what we are planning to do in the year ahead. Harry?
Good morning. We're here today to get your concurrence on the FY07 annual work program for 4 on-call engineering services contracts. This is the first contract. This is the general engineering services for P squared D. It's Parsons Breckerhoff, Parsons Transportation Group, the Lon Hampton Associates. This is a second year contract. You can see it's a $24 million program. It's broken down into the IRP program, Metro Matters Railcar program, which includes traction power substations, yards, and precision stop, and some bus program work, access, system access capacity program work, which is mostly reimbursable, system expansion program projects such as Dulles and project development, and some operating work. The total is $24 million. Next page. This is a contract that was extended last year. It's an extension to the vehicle engineering contract. It's with Booz Allen. It was extended to assure continuity to finish these programs with the people we started them with. It involves a 2K, 3K program, 6,000 series procurement, and system access also includes 6,000 series from the LARPA money, some operating budget again, and some real capital work associated with the 5,000 series.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Buffett, I believe all these items are included in our budget.
Motion for Mr. Kaufman is our second.
Second.
Second by Mr. Deegan. For discussion, Mr. Smith.
First of all, the chart that's on the table here, the 5,000 series procurement support. What does that entail at this point? I mean, we're well into the 6,000, right? All the 5,000 series. Yeah, so what does that mean?
Yeah, we do have about 6 or 8 EMIs who have to be completed. In total, we have 192 EMIs. We have completed 184, 85, and we have 5 more. One is the doors, for example. The final EMI is not done. CAP is working on it. We have to get it to the engineering. And we have 4 or 5. I don't remember from there. But it's what we call it, the 2 years after acceptance of the last car we provide. Monthly is a word for us, yes.
Yeah, okay. All right, in terms of each of these contracts, there's 4 of these contracts?
Yes.
Okay, just as an example, take this one. What was their contract last year? Was it 11-4, or does it go up and down?
I don't know. I don't remember, but I have that. I remember. Probably last year, I can guess, probably was around that much.
Yeah, and how did, you know, these are kind of big picture items here. How does it work in terms of, for instance, last year? Let's just say last year. We spent it all?
We haven't spent it all yet, but we will spend it sometime in September, October. The fiscal year ends for us June 30th, but some tasks, they're going to continue for another 60, 90 days because they have been awarded, you know, in the beginning of the year. But pretty much we're going to spend it all, and if we don't, Chuck Woodruff, when he clears our capital budget, he will come back and tell you about it.
And that's one of our hopes, actually, is to get a better sense for the board of what our actual rate of spending is. So as we look at our predictive ability, because that's what they have to do. They have to kind of guess at what the likely use of these resources will be. And we use the same tools over and over. I think we take the same guesses. The question is, can we bring in some analytical tools that give them some assistance in actually figuring out what the actual spend rates have been in the past? We know that for the most part, they spend roughly this amount. We don't know exactly what that rough amount is and in what areas that they're closer to 100% on estimate, where other areas where they're less or even more.
Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, that's the difficult position of sitting here looking at this year's guess is we have no analysis of last year's guess.
Exactly right. And what we would like to do is go back the last 5 years' guesses and get better at guessing.
Thank you.
Those numbers are just so big, and there's so little said about them. Now, for example, they're all support. Describe what we get in the system access capacity program procurement support. What is that?
Okay, let me talk about the 5,000 series, since Mr. Smith said that. The 5,000 series is pretty much 98.9% complete. We still have 1% worth of work which is meant to do, which is 4 or 5, Mr. Smith called them punch list, I call them change orders to work with CAP. In order to do those change orders, we need engineering support, which we buy from those providers. But at what the chief engineer's office did here, he said, my judgment is about 500,000. This is what Mr. Tangerini was saying, the estimate. But as they develop those task orders, a precise estimate is going to happen. Then at the end of the year, we see what we spend. And that's where it goes back to.
That was pretty easy. How about the one I asked about?
The 6,000 series?
Yes, the 1.2 million for procurement support.
The 6,000 series, we're still using the money we have from the Largo project. The Largo project had a line item, there are so many millions to buy so many cars to support the Largo project. Those cars are coming, and therefore they're using some of that money to pay for those cars.
That's an example.
Okay? The 6,000 still have engineering to do. We haven't really finished the engineering with the 6,000. We'll go for the next probably 2, 3, maybe 4 years. And we do the inspection, and we pay for the inspectors through that.
Procurement support.
For instance, an inspector, we have inspectors in the plants who are assuring the quality of the product. So an inspector in Spain, for instance, we had an instance where they found issues on some of the equipment. We go back, they call us up, we work with the manufacturer and say, we want to see what that issue is. We want to get a resolution of it. So in many ways, this is making sure that we have quality people who are reviewing the quality of the product, because we don't want to accept anything that it doesn't meet our standards. And in essence, it's kind of an insurance policy for us, because we don't get to buy things off the assembly. It's not like your Chevy. You get to buy off the assembly line, and you have some sense that it's been put together well. We have to make sure, since these are individual products, that they are put together well, so we don't repeat some of the past failures in other, rail cars.
It's fine for an engineer to go look over the shoulder and sign off, yes, they did this right,
exactly.
Yes, they did that right.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, the word procurement, Mrs. Mack, this is engineering service in support of the procurement of the 6,000 series.
Right. I think we use our shorthand, probably a little bit too much shorthand. That doesn't.
Right.
When I see procurement, I think, you know,
yeah, it's not filling out the form.
It's a contractor or something.
The program.
Yeah, okay.
It's like quality assurance.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like.
That's what it should be called. Okay.
Thank you.
Next. Discussion? Motion is to approve the recommendation. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That motion carries. Thank you very much. We just have one information item.
Yes. Mr. Chairman, the last item you're going to hear from Tom Robinson and Dave Couch is something which we haven't bring it before for discussion. It's the first time really we're going to discuss a little bit with you the adjacent construction engineering services we provide to all the jurisdictions and all the developers when they work around our railroad. Well, I'm going to ask Tom and Dave to take you through. Tom?
Hey, good morning. Today I'd like to provide an update of the Office of Joint Development Adjacent Construction Function Activities. First, some background. The office was created in the early 1980s to oversee WMATA's investment of infrastructure, operational impacts, and customer safety due to the construction activities by private and public development around the system. Development activity continues to grow in a number of projects, as well as presents greater challenges to our investment and customers with increased density of development, complexity of the work, and proximity to our system. With regard to the function JDAC performs, coordination, implementation of design, safety, functional, operational requirements, and compliance with WMATA standards, which are not addressed by jurisdictional agencies. In essence, we act as WMATA's permitting office for plan review and approvals. Additionally, we coordinate on-site activities such as maintenance of traffic, plans, systems access, support, as well as acceptance construction and installation performed by others for WMATA. Currently, we're actively engaged with over 50 adjacent construction projects, and with regard to joint development, 23 sites in either proposal selection evaluation or concept development, as well as 11 sites actively in design and construction. These projects are represented on all operating segments and within all jurisdictions. Recently, some issues have been addressed or presented with regard to the project review and fee structure we have, practices we have within JDAC. First, with regard to project reviews. We've experienced some difficulty in review as there's no regulatory or contractual relationship between developers and WMATA. Specific WMATA interests are not being addressed by jurisdictional permitting process, which requires direct contact with developer and WMATA to address. Potential solutions to this situation is to include WMATA as a reviewer on projects within the compact area in the permitting process, or continue to have WMATA as an independent review of development within 500 feet of the system, and require the developer to provide proof of WMATA approval, of plan approval to the jurisdictions. Specific to JDAC, we're restructuring and consolidating staff to better support customer needs, establishing direct email and call line for initial response and development of the project as it comes into our shop, and assessing our existing internal controls for tracking submittals and time to process them in the interest of improving our response. We've also visited the message and procedures towards the developer by compiling a revision to our adjacent construction manual. This was put together with developer input and evaluation of our practices. We feel this will better prepare contractors in advance of making submittals to WMATA by providing examples of forms and explanation of the review process. Additionally, we have proposing an expedited review process. Our standard review is a 30-day cycle. We're offering a 15 working-day review period. We're offering a consultation, basically, in the project design, where we'll work with the developers with their project to avoid significant impact to WMATA. That would lessen the demand on the project and the exposure to WMATA. And we have a selective review process that's been introduced, which we get a basic submittal and cut the burden of the project for technical submittals and review workload by WMATA staff. All these measures are with the intent to provide clarity in the process and requirements and expedite performance of the shop. JDAC. Next slide. The other issue presented was with regard to fee recovery. Compact jurisdictions in question of being charged for WMATA reviews and support costs for the projects. And current and questions regarding current practices for recovery of fees from developers have been addressed. We've put a suggestion for fee recovery and developing a fee structure matrix. The basis is based on historical thresholds required for WMATA involvement in the projects. Basically, it's a progressive scale of invasiveness to the system from least to most invasive. Project development is the basic and requiring basically general meeting attendance, project preparation, compilation submittals, review of the project, any safety implications. Engineering supports, fairly benign step. There may be some supportive excavation, access coordination issues.
Mr. Chairman, what we're trying to communicate with Hilda is this. We have 55 projects going on right now throughout our system. Some projects are small, some projects are huge. You all know from your own phone calls how this project works. So what we try to tell you for the first time, we do have an active program of engineers watching these things. It's like our own permitting agency is like it. And here is our fees. Here is the complications we're going through because these things are highly complex requests we get most of the time. That sometimes we are lucky to break even in money. We don't know precisely if we're making money. Definitely we don't know that. But the fear we have is maybe you support these activities through the operating budget. We don't know that precisely either. But what I wanted to do here for the first time, and I know the chairman asked me some time ago to put this forward for all of you to see it, is how we're charging it, how long it takes to review them, how many requests we have, what type of projects we're dealing with, and just inform you about it. It's nothing really we're asking you to take an action on it, but more to know about it. And as we go in more, maybe I come back and see if I need your support to increase the fees or any other things which you would like us to do through this program. That's the purpose of being before you today.
Mr. Sopas, this is joint development and adjacent construction. Right? So are you focusing on joint development per se, or do you mean both? So it means also things where somebody on property has nothing to do with WMATA but happens to be nearby. And,
right.
You know, I mean, for instance, you're near the tunnel and you got a building on Clarendon Boulevard and they got to deal with WMATA because they're going near the tunnel and they can't build unless they get sign off. What is the extent of our control over that sort of thing? How far away?
But what we try and do, Mr. Chairman, is we try to make sure that we're involved within 500 feet of any tunnel location. The difficult part is that because we're not part of any of the regulatory permit process, it's really something that we have to use on a voluntary basis with the developers to get us inserted in that process.
But it's not entirely voluntary because you have, I mean, the easement that WMATA has extends 500 feet?
No, it's not. If you think of one of our structures being 50 feet below ground, there is an area of influence if someone is doing an excavation, that if they are close enough to the structure, there could be an effect on our underground structures. So while it is not within our easement, not within our control, what they do for that construction process could very well have an effect on the system.
But not just that. What I'm saying is I want to dig my hole next to where the tunnel is. I don't understand how it works, but I know you have the power to stop them because I've seen it happen.
It's not a power that is there that exists within anything that we have a fixed policy with. We are not part of the jurisdiction approval process or the permitting process.
I don't understand how it works, but I can bring the folks into the Navy League, and they can tell you the stories about how they had to redesign their whole garage because they couldn't go ahead.
And that's frankly why I wanted this discussion to start, because I've heard complaints from the development community about how difficult it is to work with WMATA. Now, I don't know if it's perceptional or if it's real.
I wasn't even talking about whether it was difficult. The fact of the matter was they went to dig a garage, and the tunnel, you know, wasn't necessarily exactly where they had thought until they went down or whatever. And the point is that they couldn't move ahead until that thing was reworked. And at some point, they had to get signed off from WMATA in order to be able to go ahead and put their building in. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. But I don't understand the mechanism by which that occurs. But there obviously must be some mechanism, otherwise we'd have people poking holes in our tunnels all the time, and that would be a problem. So I just assume there's some kind of easement by which
there is no regulatory requirement in any of the jurisdictions or any power that we have over control of something that's outside of our easement.
But how far does the easement extend?
It depends. In some cases, we have nothing but an underground easement. We have the area of the tunnels themselves. In a lot of cases where we're constructed in the city streets, the area above our tunnels is owned by the city or the county.
Sure.
There is no WMATA easement there. If we are in the center of a street and someone is putting in a building that has a parking structure that goes down deep enough to be adjacent to our tunnels, we don't have any control over that. We don't have any property rights there. But it could very well, as you mentioned, affect our structures. And it's something that's been...
This is a complete mystery to me, because I can tell you everybody involved in development in my county, where there are a lot of metro stations, a lot of development is near metro stations, everybody, citizens, developers, architects, county people, all believe that metro essentially can trump anything. And anytime we're talking about it, it's, there's a tunnel there. Where's the tunnel? And, you know, we can't talk about that unless we find out if Metro will let us do that. So, you know, if that's all a myth, anybody can go dig anything anytime they want to, then that would be news to everybody involved with all that.
They probably wouldn't get insurance, and no contractor would take on the risk associated with it until they had talked about it.
Because of liability.
And
all of
some
it is liability.
In some sense, it's self-regulating, and the conversation is truncated and made simpler for discussion purposes by simply saying, well, Metro won't let us do that.
Okay, but so at some point here, somebody at Metro, somewhere in this building, signs a piece of paper, and some guy has to have that and be able to show that to somebody, or he doesn't get to dig his hole, right? So there is an effective regulatory mechanism. And my question was really just when that kicks in and you know, how it works that you're involved in that. And
it's more of a process because the major developers who do work around our structures, they have insurance requirements that are in place for their projects.
Okay.
And if they were to do something that would affect the metro structure or any of our service, then they would be liable under their insurance carriers.
So they have basically effectively held up unless they have clearance that's okay with WMATA, what they're doing. And if they can't get the attention because you guys are backed up or whatever it is,
right,
then they're held up.
Right.
And is that part of what you're getting at here, is giving them the option where they would have to pay more than they pay now, which I gather is a nominal fee, but they could know they could turn around an inspection in some reasonable period of time.
That's the direction we'd like to head, is actually formalizing the process, ensuring that the fees actually recover the costs associated with the program, and then offer potentially a guaranteed turnaround time to developers for a premium fee. When I've talked to developers, and in my previous experience running a permitting office, they're more than happy to trade a premium fee for a specific date, because every day that they're losing while they're having a conversation is costing them substantial amounts of money. Predictability is very important in the development.
We have this exact issue at our level, you know, county with the building process. So I think I understand that. Mr. Smith.
Yeah, I'm actually not a big fan of auctioning off expedited or what should be regular service to permit applicants to the highest bidder. On top of that, you know, the other thing, in terms of my experience with the whole idea of paying to have a permit issued within a certain date or a certain time. I'd be interested in hearing how you go about doing that from a staffing perspective, because certainly at the permit office level, quite often what they do is they say you're paying overtime at that point. And in fact, in some cases, the reviewer might take it home for the weekend and do it in order to accommodate that schedule. I mean, you know, I'm not sure to what degree that helps the permitting authority then, because we know the whole story of overtime and how that affects other aspects of the authority and whether or not we want reviewers reviewing stuff on overtime and working extra odd hours in what are very highly technical areas in the deep details of drawings and books and specifications. You know, people need a certain amount of sleep in a day to function. So this whole staffing aspect of what this premium fee is providing, you know, concerns me whether we are paying overtime to meet dates or we're actually having a staff that those fees cover. Given my experience of salaries and benefits and such here, I don't think those fees would cover any problem. I also have concerns about what the slide change. On page 3, you know, just basic project development costs, fee range is $10,000. I mean, what does that mean? And, you're talking about tunnels and in the city. Adjacent construction in the suburbs, we're above ground on land. If I wanted to build a shopping center along the back side of the right-of-way, is that in here in some way?
It's all in there, and this is a range. If you go to the next slide.
Well, the range bothers me, quite frankly. I mean, if I'm building a strip shopping center and it's one story and I've just got footers going down the cross, why am I paying anybody $10,000 as a minimum fee, period?
Again, this is put out there. What we put together were the historical costs that we've had over the past 3 to 5 years on types of projects, depending upon the support that we've provided and whether the project is less than a year long or whether it's 2 or 3 years long. By going to a fixed fee structure, what we're attempting to get away from is spending an inordinate amount of time going through an administrative process to establish that there is only $2,000 and please send in a check before we do the review on that strip shopping center that's going next to our structure. There's a lot of different ways to do this. It can be a different level of fee structure, but part of what we're trying to get to is, since this process was put in place in the mid-80s, is it's been on an estimated basis of what we think the support will take, what the review time will be, what the inspection in the field will be, and we're trying to get a structure around it so that the administrative cost of providing the service to the developer doesn't take us more than the actual review of the drawings. There could be a different way, and what we're really looking at in this is comments from you, that we may want to waive something and absorb it within the current budget if it is a minimal review that we do in less than a couple of days' time. There's a lot of ways to put a framework around this, and right now, because of the fact that it's treated more as a reimbursable item, the early part of the process is establishing the agreement, then the amount of money and the fee and getting the check in to start the process. We're trying to get rid of that administrative part. We could drop, it could be something considerably less than this.
This is an information item. Is this something that would ultimately be brought back to the board for action? Absolutely. The schedule would be. It would be a board action.
What we're trying to do is garner the board's interest, the board's concerns.
Like, this is not, you're not telling us about something you're about to implement.
No,
you're starting the conversation.
We're looking here at where you are.
Okay, all right, I just want to make sure.
Okay, I mean, on the adjacent construction design manual cover that's in the presentation, it says April 2006, you all indicated you had input from the development community. What vehicle was that? I mean, it's like somebody dropped by and said hello, you had a meeting, you invited people. How did that work?
We discussed their experiences with the process.
Who's
developers, contractors, engineering firms?
But was there an advertisement that asked for developers to come to a meeting or something, or you just did it casually upstairs?
From active and ongoing projects.
Active and ongoing.
Yes.
Yeah, we didn't do an advertisement. No.
ever really going out and say, hey, development community, engineering firms, architectural firms, give us your comments on our manual, your experiences and lessons when working with us. We never did that.
Yeah, I mean, because, you know, Mr. Tangrini referred to complaints. I mean, the complaints that I hear are not so much in WMATA doesn't process evaluation of items relative to my project moving forward so much as the WMATA puts a heavy burden on us in terms of their spec requirements and their construction engineering requirements, particularly under the TOD program. I mean, that's where I hear complaints all the time. Right, right. Building projects. I don't really hear comments, you know, in the development world about, well, gee, I needed a review from WMATA, and therefore my project got held up and I didn't get a permit. I mean, I hear that all the time at the local level, relative to the permit office, relative to the planning board, and others that take forever to review a project. But I hear
both.
I really don't hear a lot about WMATA.
And I've heard, related to tunnels in particular, I've heard some developers say, we're not even interested in going near that property because there's a tunnel there and you'll never get it, quote unquote, through WMATA.
See, that's what I was saying.
Right. But is it you'll never get it through WMATA because it takes us a long time to review it, or is it because we stymie the process with our...
Well, and the point is, you know, yes or no, it doesn't really matter. There's that perception out there. What we're trying to do is work on whatever it is that's underlying those perceptions to try to facilitate, not be an impediment, either real or perceived impediment, to these, you know, these economic activity. And so our folks are taking a first stab at one way to do it. We're getting, I think, some useful comments here, and I think that we can go back and continue to work on this. This issue hasn't been touched since the mid-80s, and so I think it reflects, you know, the leaning forward nature on the folks who are working on this to try to see what we can do to make it better.
Well, I think in terms of evaluating what fees you might charge or wish to cover, that you need to be very careful because, not even considering the fact that I'm involved in the construction industry, I just politically, philosophically, I'm not one to soak the developers for their last dime because that's where the money is, so let's go and get it. And I think that a lot of jurisdictions in this area are certainly doing that right now. And there's a tough balance to be figured. And right now, things are great. A lot of construction going on. It's the best time to be alive in construction work. But I lived through 1981, 82, 83. I lived through 1990, 91, 92. There are times where you tilt that balance and you shut off development, and a whole lot of other things go wrong other than just construction at that time. Thank you.
I heard a couple of different things. You immediately pointed to the issue of should you allow folks to kind of pay for an expedited process. There are definitely a lot of issues related to that, which I'm not sure how I feel about either.
Right.
But I'd like to separate that from the question of just, you know, the payment for the service on the basis of, well, I mean, my jurisdiction does it on a cost recovery basis. So we set fees for these things that are intended to recover the cost. County outlays for the inspectors and the processes. And we certainly have found with the incredible pace of development that it's very hard to keep up. You have, you know, inspectors who are handling a bigger and bigger load more than they should to do their jobs properly. But we don't do that. We don't have anything like that. But we do have a fee. It's a cost for every base. I mean, you have to pay for these things. We're doing it. The cost of development has to be captured by the development. But what we've had to do, you know, we've had to expand the service simply to keep up with the pace. And, you know, we match the fees to do that. So we're hiring 6 additional inspectors, for instance, and we put the money in the budget, and the fees are going to pay for it. We're actually getting excess money in fees because we couldn't keep up, you know. So we're not trying to make money on the thing. We're not trying to lose money on it. We're trying to match it. And, you know, I thought I understood that Metro hasn't kind of really done that, hasn't looked at the fee structure in a long time, and, you know, it's sort of nominal. And even with all the cautions you made, which are, I think, are valid, it does seem to me it's reasonable to look at it now, especially in the climate we're in, and say, now do we need some kind of adjustment to this, both so we have appropriate cost recovery and so that the process works in a way? Because I have heard, I mean, I definitely heard it from about the county, but I've heard it with Metro as well. And again, noting that this is an information item, and I think that some of the questions that Mr. Smith asked are very suggestive of what you want to do next. Because I think before you bring anything that the board would want to act on, that we'd want to see first of all, my thought was, look at all the local jurisdictions, talk to the people who do this and what they do, because there's probably a lot of, you know, knowledge there, and it might be useful to find ways to parallel what they're doing. Part of it is probably integrating the process is somewhat better. And the folks in the private sector who have to actually, you know, undergo this and pay these fees, and I think having that kind of outreach will result in a better proposal in the end.
And I also heard a very good point about making it clear when you need to call WMATA. What is it? Kind of like the...
This utility?
First call, I think they call it now. Yeah, so know when you need to talk to us. And formalize that, routinize that, so it doesn't seem like this big, scary potential.
I think the gentleman just responded to what I... it seems to me that too much has been focused on the fees, that a lot of the complaints are process issues, and the question is whether or not we have established more of a process, and a process where all parties involved know what the boundaries are. And it seems like that is a big part of the issue here. And fee, going back to what Mr. Zimmer said, if it's a matter of fee recovery, which means that the demands are such that staff can't keep up and we need to have additional staff, and there's some understanding that that's what you're going to get. But that also means at the end of that there's an expedited process, not because you're paying for an expedited process, but you're providing the kind of staff resources you need to respond to the demand.
It's good for everybody.
That's right. That's right. I think I would, and I also think that engaging those who would be affected in the process would be a useful exercise. So when you identify what are the issues, what are you trying to solve for? And we may be spending a lot of money with fee recovery and some other items, but still never get to the heart of what is driving the developers and the jurisdictions to create the problems for them. So.
Yeah, and especially once you get underway in construction, it's not many years just to stretch it out. It's not involved, this is only everybody who lives around it. If it gets dragged out longer, everybody suffers. Further discussion. This is an information item, so we look forward to hearing back from you with that additional research. And I believe that does it for
Chairman.
This way, Mr. Graham.
I just want to make note of the fact that I have received a memorandum on the significant board actions relating to the Dulles extension. And I do have a couple of informational questions, if I may.
I'll do that now. Okay.
I just wanted just to clarify just what the... This is a memorandum that's within our material.
Distributed to everyone.
It's distributed to everyone dated April the 19th from our general manager. And the question that I have is that on the final paragraph of the memorandum, there is a statement as to what additional actions the board can expect. And my purpose in making this inquiry was I had several purposes. Number one, I just wanted to be refreshed on the actions that we had taken. All of these actions have occurred since I've been a member of the board, and I remembered that we had taken various actions, but this has been very helpful in order to just refresh my recollection of those. The second purpose was to get a better understanding of just what our role is in all of this. And, this is obviously an incredibly major alteration of this system. And I just wanted to understand, just as I read in the newspapers, just what is the Metro Board's involvement in all of this. And so the information I've been given has been very helpful. On page 2, at the very top, under a resolution that we passed in 2002, we stated that the future implementation of the Dulles extension is subject to the board approval of a final financial plan. And I assume that is still, I've read the whole memo, but I assume that's still in effect. Am I right? And yet it is not really referenced on your memorandum, Mr. Tangerine, at the bottom of your memorandum. It's not explicitly referenced, so that'll give you some colors there. In addition,
it's on number 3, review of updating components of the final financial plan. The last sentence, the last 4.
So by this you meant the review, the approved, by this you meant approval of the financial, final.
The staff expects to seek additional action from the board, and I guess I could have been more explicit that that would mean approval, but I guess if the review wasn't satisfactory.
I think we need, I'm just trying to find out just what it is. So we have an approval of the final financial plan. And then on our resolution of 2004, we have to approve the indemnification on paragraph 7. And I guess what we don't have to go through this, but I guess what I'm looking for is just, you know, in an effort to understand what my role is and what the board's role is on these very important issues, is just, you know, a succinct statement of what it is that we have approved. It seems as though we have a great deal left to approve, and in various specifics, we need to finalize some conditional approvals that we've made, and maybe the way to approach this is to just have a succinct statement of what the approvals are that we have yet to make.
And to some extent, that those approvals will change as the project itself is changing. There's an awful lot happening even today in terms of what, who's going to implement the project, how are they going to implement it. And so to some extent, just as this memo in many ways has been overtaken by events, any subsequent succinct statement will be overtaken by events. We have a number of issues that have been, and frankly, I'm probably not the best person to speak to this. A couple of the best ones are here. A number of actions taken by the Fairfax County Board, continued discussions with the state of Virginia, what is the role of the current contract manager, where is the project in its timeline. Those issues are currently being worked through, and so in many ways, WMATA is sitting neutral, waiting to hear what the outcome of those discussions are in Virginia.
The Secretary of Transportation was yesterday, kept standing for 4.5 hours, I believe, in front of the House Committee being grilled about the governor's proposal. So I'd say the answer to some of the questions are yet to be determined.
I read that, but in anticipation of these things, I mean, do we approve construction? Do we have any role in the approval of construction? Are we standing by with whatever action is to be taken by Virginia on these issues? And again, I'm not saying that we should take a particular point of view. I'm just trying to understand what our role is here. And if we don't have a role, well, tell us we don't have a role.
I think to some degree, the answer to that awaits Virginia actually having a project. And they're sort of on the verge of a project at this point. And once there's a clear indication of what Virginia is going to do with the project, then that conversation can begin. Right now, there are several multiple possible answers to your question, depending on, you know, what would happen, including not going forward with the project.
Right, but assuming it goes forward, do they have a stop that they must make here?
If they want the system to be taken over by Metro and tied to the Metro system, then yes.
And in many ways, there are lots of stops. There's one even prepared for July, which is the approval of the supplemental public hearing staff report for STEP, Dulles Carter Wheelie Avenue extension, an update on the Dulles Carter Rapid Transit project proposed July 6th. That's simply the completion of the EIS process and review of the outcome of that EIS process for action by, in fact, this committee. There are agreements that will have to be negotiated with whoever is going to build this on what role WMATA plays as a technical advisor. There are indemnification requirements that will be reviewed and approved by the board. It's a big project. There are a number of stops along the way, if you pardon the subway comment. And the board will be, at the right time, brought forth. There will be actions brought forth the board for their review and approval.
Just one other question. Well, I appreciate that. But let me just ask, has there been a formal action by this board assuming the operational costs once this is constructed?
We did, in 2002, amend the adopted regional system. So there has been, and we, along the way, as you can see through these discussions with various actions of the board, we have added, in essence,
parcels in the plan map of Metro would be the Dulles extension. By doing that, we've assumed successful completion of the Dulles project to the extent that we're happy with it, that we would in fact operate it and assume it into the system. That was really the first resolution, 2002-54. The board selected the locally preferred alternative and amended the adopted regional system, contingent on the fulfillment of conditions necessary to accept the Dulles extension into the area.
So the closest I got to that was in 2000-35, Article 2. Operating deficit. Is that what you would say?
Mm-hmm. I didn't hear it.
Is that what you would say?
Yes.
Insofar as our explicit agreement to assume the operational cost, which is somewhat open-ended, closest I get to that is the very first resolution, adopted in 2000, May 25, 2000, second paragraph, unless I'm misreading it.
Well, I think that's right. I mean, that's, you know, the first statement of the law. I think the really formal thing was the adoption of the ARS. I mean, obviously, the commitment was made to it in 2000, but the real statement, I think, was in 2002 when the original action amendment was made. Collectively.
I think they actually do relate in the sense that 2035 states that any extension will be allocated according to the existing formula. 2254 adopts, in essence, the Dulles part of project into the ARS.
Yeah, because the 2000 says, if we adopt the ARS, this would be the basis for it. And then in 2002, we adopted the ARS for some reason. So
with contingencies, and those contingencies, frankly, you know, remain in effect, and we still have a lot of contingencies, frankly, on who's building it and how they're doing it. So.
I just want to comment on the issue of the operating costs. At the time that we adopted that resolution on the ARS, the district representative did express some concern about the huge increase in operating costs that this would mean, and we caused to happen an actual computation of what we thought that operating cost was going to be, and we also made note at the time that might be another need to take a look at the allocation formulas to see if there were any implications for changes. Of course, the mere extension of 23 miles to the system certainly does reshuffle the dollar amounts of the allocation. So
through the operation of the formula, Virginia pays more.
Yeah, exactly.
Proportionately.
Well, but we pay more too, which is the
point. No. Proportionately, Virginia pays more.
Mr. Zimmerman, I do understand that, but our dollar amount goes up. So it's the percent is less, but the dollar amount is greater. So it's just
as it was when they opened the New York Avenue station and when they opened the
I was
the
just
station.
Making a statement. But my major point is that I think because this project is so large and because it's so important and because it's so complicated, I think that we should put on our agenda, on whatever committee, if it's your committee, sort of a regular update on what the implications for LaMotta are as this project progresses. It should, and because it is changing so much, it would be good for us to know on some kind of a regular basis what those implications are. So that would be my recommendation.
I'm happy to have both rail and plan involvement put on the agenda as often as you want.
Well, every month, that's all.
Issues, I think, remaining questions are primarily functional versus financial goals, physically related. And I think the, as Mr. Zimmerman alluded to, the formula basically seeing the system being almost exactly a third of Virginia.
That's exactly right. The formula would roughly bring it to a third Virginia, a third D.C., a third Maryland. Well, the numbers for everyone would be higher in terms of operating costs. The split would be more even, and it would actually represent after 30-some years.
So I look forward to just accelerating that.
Well, Mr. Kaufman, let me say, a third, a third, a third is nice and even, but maybe it shouldn't be a third, a third, a third. Maybe it should be of some other combination.
So you should pay something that more social.
But at any rate, I think that one of the things that I'm concerned about, I think this expression of interest in knowing what the facts are in this project should not be taken as any thing other than a need to know. I mean, as members of this board, and if this is fully integrated into the system, as we're all talking about it, it would be good for us to know a little bit more on a regular basis about what's going on.
I'd be happy to have an agenda. I would suggest you forward specific questions that we can make sure they're addressed.
If I have any, sure. But this is not raised because I have questions.
I don't know that there are going to be new implications next month or the month after that, any different than last month.
Then we can just say we have nothing to do with it.
Have tell. Okay, so can we put a regular Dulles item on our agenda for every meeting as far as I'm concerned? Because we're certainly happy to talk about it. Mr. Goffman.
Looking for the regular update on every extension project. We can put a modifying group. We can put an update on everything that's involved in this.
Well, can I address that, Mr. Kaufman? This is the first such 23-mile extension that we have. I can't imagine why you would reject having an update. I just, and if the committee... What if we just limit it to extensions? Is that okay?
Or just limit it to extensions in Virginia.
Well, no.
starting with D.
I think certainly we have the time to make it for you. Is there relevant items to come forward that does impact issues that affect the and thought we need to be brought forward? But to just regularly put it out there, so on a regular basis we have the time to have this dialogue. I don't think that serves the way to go this system.
Well, I appreciate your opinion. I just respectfully disagree.
And me, how many stations do we have to in the system?
86.
How many of those are on the other side of the Potomac River?
Less than 86.
The answer is 20.
Okay, thank you. I need you to know.
Thank you. You're acknowledging the challenge game machine. Battle line here. Once again, trying to be above the fray, trying to raise this to a level of what the system is supposed to be about. I see it as an opportunity of providing congestion relief to this region. I would be interested in an update, but I also think that needs to be quantified in some way, because this is a constantly changing issue. And for someone who's been involved in some of these discussions, this is something that changes every week. And you start getting stuck in things that, quite frankly, I don't want to spend a lot of time on. I would prefer if we kind of define what our issues are, our interests are, if there were some established points that I think the general manager laid out where we are impacted and we need to be prepared for some decision making that we need to take. I like to get some established process for an update. I don't want to be every time the governor makes a statement, it's in the Washington Post, that we spend what we're doing here now 45 minutes to an hour talking about it. We spend too much time doing those things here as it is. I don't want to build some more of that into our process. So unless we kind of confine this to some reasonableness, I would be opposed.
I'm not sure.
I'm still waiting to hear what the hit is.
He's opposed to it, and he's not.
Tell me what you want on the
I'm opposed to nonsense. Okay? So if it's confined to some reasonableness, and it's practical, then I can support it.
Well, let me, Mr. Lennon, I must say, I'm not suggesting nonsense.
Supervisor, I've said before.
And, okay, I'll leave that.
You know, I think it would be good to have this board get comfortable with the Dulles project and the progress that's being made and the challenges that we're going through. I think that to think that there is information that is not, that will not be made available to you, as the memo has done, it has been quite clear that every major action affecting this board has been brought forthrightly through the committee and to the board, and I would expect us to continue to do that. I don't understand the uncertainty or the lack of clarity that's going on. Are there opportunities to fill in the board on what the challenges are? Yes, we could do that, but I don't think it would change any of the discussion that's been had here until we get to the items that affect the board. And that's where I think I would hope that's where the discussion is pointing to. There are lots of things that are going on today, but we could come and talk to them about it. But based on what we've done here, nothing else has changed. If I'm not mistaken, when it was decided to accept this project in terms of the operating responsibility that may come forward to the board and WMATA, that still exists. It still exists that it is WMATA that is the technical advisor to the project. That still exists. So I don't see anything different that's happening here. I think if it helps providing somebody a memo to say, gee whiz, this is what Virginia's discussing today, but it doesn't change the project. So I think there seems to be some misgivings that may be occurring that may not be necessary.
Yeah, can I just be reminded again of what the projected increase in the operating cost is?
We'll take that up at the next meeting. Please provide us with an update on the next meeting on whatever information is available, including
we don't have that.
I don't have that off the top of my head, but I can.
I'd also like an update, if you can. I know these materials have been provided in the past on the formula.
Right.
That's where this is really going. So
well,
can you get us, the analysis that's been done in the past that explains the formula?
Let me finish. I'm here as a voting member of this board, and I'm asking. Thank you very much. But I'm sensing a little bit of shortness here, and we have serious questions about this matter, and we're asking them in a reasonable way. The memo has been very helpful. I think Mrs. Mack's comments are intended to be very constructive on these issues. The Council of the District of Columbia, which I am a member of, as you probably know, has just committed to $50 million sales tax revenues annually, you know, to this authority from the taxpayers of the District of Columbia. Now, I want to get a better sense of all of these issues because we are projecting forward. I hope to be reelected this year. I hope to have another 4 years at this. And I'm interested in knowing just what it is we're looking at. In addition to the $50 million that we've already, the only jurisdiction to step forward, as you know, have come forward with that commitment.
Making a difference on that last.
Well, is that another
in fact, all our local governments have done the same. We are in the unfortunate position of needing permission from our state government.
Right. But we're
already
on
the record for it.
Well, and I appreciate
joined
that, but we are the only ones that have taken an effective action and at this juncture.
Having that power is
good. Anyway, the point is that I think we need to be respectful of each other's points of view, and I want to approach this in a very respectful way. But I have very real questions that are on my mind and on the minds of the D.C. government that I'm going to express.
That's right. Anything else anybody wants to add to the agenda today? Not? Real estate right away?
Sure.
Real estate committee will meet on adjournment. Okay, right now, Charlie and I will change chairs.
No,
move the gavel.